Dreams that you dream of, dreams really do come true. Ooh, someday you wish upon a star, wake up where the clouds are far behind. Be where trouble melts like lemon drops, high above the chimney top, that's where find me, oh, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. And the dream that you dare to, oh, why can't I?
We were debating on the music coming back, and we thought, you know, it's almost like a Somewhere Over the Rainbow moment. Alex and I shouldn't work together because we both have kind of a quirky sense of humor, and unfortunately, we don't include Bill in our plans, so there's no adults in the room.
You hit the nail on the head with that one, I think.
I got carried away after the dog song. So this is the second hour of We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan,
and I'm Bill Kunduff.
And we're back with our friends, Fred, Shanaz, and Javed. Did I get them right?
Yes, yes.
I've really been working on
it. Thank you.
You know, that's the problem about being born in this country. We only speak one language and we stink at doing foreign names. But, yeah, try not to butcher it too bad. So, I forget. Where did we leave off?
I was doing good.
I think we were talking about
We were talking about how Javed never gets a word in edgewise.
Yes.
All right, it's all yours. Go, Javed.
You asked a question, the IRGC and what should be done about them. I think in order to really understand that question, and the answer to that question is to understand Iran better. Iran is a big country. It has more than 90 million population. In terms of territory, Iran is bigger than the whole Europe. And why we say that no war, war is not the solution? Because you cannot bomb a country of that nature, you know, and make a regime change. You definitely need boots on the ground to be supported by aerial. And we are definitely opposed to any kind of, American boots on the ground. We don't want any Americans to be killed in Iranian territory. We think it's the Iranian responsibility to change that regime. So that's why we are against war. And we are against appeasement too. This dealing with the IRGC, which is already on the terrorist list of U.S. and European Union, recently passed a resolution to that extent, and England is doing the same thing. So it's basically appeasing that regime. Mm-hmm. And appeasement policy has failed through history. You know, in World War II, Western countries, European countries, tried to appease Hitler. And that failed. And eventually they went to war with Hitler, which they paid a lot of prices for that. So we are saying that we don't want war, we don't want appeasement, but support democracy, support the people. Let the people change the regime and be responsible for that change. And so that's that. And then on the question of what are we going to do with that huge IRGC, one thing that I know and I've heard from many people is that the main body of that force is not happy with the system. So it's only the top brass which is really enjoying, you know, financially and the power of that regime. So once this regime is overthrown, the regime change is done by the Iranian people, the main body of these will join the people. They are not going to stay there. So, and again, the opposition has a plan that eventually even the top brass would give him fair trial to go on trial, public, and, you know, be tried. If any crimes committed, they will pay for it. That's basically where we are coming from.
Yeah.
So I don't want to take
it. I just want to add the current situation inside Iran that could, you know, help with toppling the regime by the Iranian people, and the IRGC cannot do anything about it. There is triple-digit inflation inside Iran. For example, the simplest, cheapest thing, the bread prices triple, quadruple, and this is, I mean, the large population is very poor. There's a harsh living conditions, as you know, during this 3 months of shutdown, internet shutdown, millions of people are out of jobs. And the regime, by executions and imprisonment, is trying to control the people, and by blaming it on the war. But we know, the history has shown, this is not going to be the best outcome for the regime. It is in the favor of the people and the resistant organization that is trying to bring democracy and peace and freedom to the Iran.
How do you feel about the ceasefire? Do you think this is giving the IRGC a chance to kind of reset and rearm, and or do you think they are reading the cards that their days are numbered?
We said war is the regime shield against the popular uprising,
mm-hmm.
while the peace and ceasefire is like a poison for them. Either way, they are not in a good shape. So this is my opinion. That's what I've heard from a lot of experts that know this regime well. So either way, it's not in their final favor.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, can I add one more important factor in this equation?
Sure.
What happened also here is when we went to Iraq, there was the Iranian MEK. They have a lot of bases in Iraq. And in that time, National Liberation Army of Iran was very, very strong, and they were attacking Iranian regime. And in that time, when we went to the Iraq, USA, when we went to Iraq, we disarmed MEK. Right now, I have the news press from the headquarters of United States Central Command, dated May 17, 2003. Quote, update on consolidation of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq MEK. Coalition force are consolidated. 2,139 tanks, armed personnel carrier, arbitrary pieces, air defense artillery pieces, and miscellaneous vehicle, formerly in the position of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq MEK forces. Quote, my point is that the national and other factors we have to fight against this IRGC is National Army, National Liberation Army of Iran. They are very strong, and they are strong. They start expanding inside Iran. They are underground, but they are planning also for regime change. Therefore, there have been so many fights between the Iranian resistance and Iranian regime that they have a lot of experience. Therefore, as you know, we have more than 2,500 members of the MEK in the Albania, which all of them, they are very much experienced, and they're very much like a general. They have a lot of experience. That's why right now one of our requests to the United States is to give back our weapons. Therefore, this is the weapon that in that time they took from Iranian opposition during the war, and that time we want them back to go back to the Iranian people, and we can use against the Iranian government. My point is there is a lot of fighters, There's a lot of people that want to fight against this regime inside Iran. That's why we are talking. There's no why when we have all this available to us, we don't need to send the boots in Iran or soldier in Iran or spend taxpayer than they can do it themselves. Therefore, I can send you the copy of this statement from the headquarters of the United States, which is on May 17, 2003.
Okay, so that's only 3 or 4 weeks old, really, so it should be fairly accurate.
Yeah. We have all these tools to regime change in Iran. IRGC, they're strong, but their weakness is Iranian people. That's what, they're afraid of Iranian people, and they do everything to practically stop uprising in Iran.
And who exactly are they dealing with when they sign this ceasefire? What regime or what group is actually representing Iran in those ceasefire talks?
The ceasefire talk is that the leading person is Ghalibov, which is he's the speaker of the House for them. But as the channels mentioned, Ghalibov is also from IRGC. He's a member of IRGC. But he's the leading person on negotiation, but also the person who signed is Iranian president, called Pezeshkian. He's the one who signed the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned, Iran doesn't have a good nature. They practically, for them, they're trying to buy time.
Exactly, and that's always been their
ploy is
they're just stalling for time, and by stalling
exactly.
for time, does that give them a stronger position as far militarily? I mean, obviously they can't stand up to the United States, but they can certainly make it hard on their own people by giving them more time. Is that kind of how you see it?
Absolutely.
Something.
I see that actually. They wanna wait until another administration to come over to do their dealings and wheelings,
mm-hmm.
filling time. And they are I hear a lot this sentence. They're masters of deception.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you that's what they're gonna do. They go back. They do something else.
And so from your perspective, since you know the country way better than we do, is that true?
I believe they are lying. They are showing their face, smiling, and underneath they do something else.
Hmm.
And this has been the trend for the past 47 years.
Right.
The West have tried to, this guy is moderate, or this is better than the other one. They're all they end up being the same. It's a medieval regime, and no amount of economic, political concessions can moderate their behavior. It's, the history of their terrorism, the bomb attacks, all of those, it should be the best lesson for any Western diplomat to, when they're negotiating with this, verify and know the history. And I don't know the people that are negotiating with them, how deeply they understand this regime. I really hope they succeed. Especially for the nuclear program. And do you know, I don't want to talk too long, NCRI is the one that for the first time exposed regimes a nuclear program. And since then, we've had almost 133 different revelation of the people's missiles program, the drone program, and different nuclear activities, how they're using it to create a bomb. All of those have been exposed by NCRI through their, secret forces inside Iran. Mm-hmm. So we know the regime much better than anybody else, I believe.
Yeah, it kind of confuses me a little bit that we've been, at this regime for the last 47 years, and they lie, they don't do what they say they're going to do, and then behind the scenes they're actively working against any agreement that they've made. How do we trust people like that and continue to negotiate with people like that?
We cannot trust a regime like this. This is a regime which even the Iranian people do not trust.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one example. More than a year ago, they shut down a civilian airliner and killed more than 165 people, innocent people. This was an Ukrainian airliner, which they shut it down. And for 3 days, the whole regime was denying that they did it. After 3 days, that there were so many evidence showing that they did it, finally they accepted, yes, we did it. But it was a mistake.
Yeah.
Oh, which was not a mistake.
They
did it intentionally.
Sure. Yeah.
I was going to say that
this is not a trustworthy regime. Any kind of negotiation is appeasing the evil. You cannot appease Hitler. You cannot appease evil.
We like to try, though. We always think, if we just do it right, right? If you just do good appeasing, it'll work.
No.
It never works. We have to take a really quick break so we can ponder that. And we'll be back with our guests. We have Fred, Shanaz, and Javad. I'm going to make Bill say it next time, and then he can feel the pressure. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What is it good for? Nothing. What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Say it again.
No, we implant speakers all over where the Iranian government officials are, and we just play that song secretly in the background.
I just have to say the music is on fire today.
Yes, thank you so much.
Is it okay if I ask a question?
Fire away,
okay.
Alex.
So before the last break, you were talking about the dishonesty of the powers that be, and the question I have, I'm the producer, by the way, is this conflict, what's going on, just as much a war of stories as it is a kinetic conflict? A war of information that goes back and forth. I'm just curious, that's all.
Bill, can you expand on your question more, please?
Information coming from the Iranian government about what's going on, and the U.S. government for that matter, there seems to be a lot of back and forth that comes from both sides, informationally, whether it be on the news, whether it be on the internet, whether it be on social media. There just seems to be a lot of things that are thrown back and forth.
That's a good question. That's, Shannon, go ahead.
I think regime is using the internet, social media, with their apologists in the West to distract and change the talking point in favor of the regime. Mm. U.S., with the best intentions, the team that they are trying to negotiate a peaceful deal with this government, I think they are being put under pressure, showing, you know, the harms and things that is causing the whole world, the American people. So the regime is using, in my opinion, the social media through their apologists and through the all these extremists within, you know, Western countries, both Europe and U.S., to make the deal somehow in the favor of this regime, the clerical regime. It is a part of war. It's not just a war with the bombs and missiles. It's a political war too. For example, there is an account in the Twitter X that is supposedly it's Golubov, the chief negotiator, and the things that they put out. Somehow it just contradicts what they're saying during their negotiations. And they never deny those words that come from that account. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This has made things much more complicated. And you have New York Times or Washington Post that they... through their own sources, God knows where those sources come from, trying to meddle in between to defeat, you know, a good intention. Don't get us wrong. We want a negotiation, something to end the nuclear program in Iran, because the regime uses the nuclear program to survive. And I was at a conference in Paris this past week, and one of the things that one of the generals that was talking General Keith Kellogg, you know, Ukraine envoy or something like that. Yeah. So he said, and recent denuclearized regime is the one that Iranian people can overthrow. So again, it is our job to do that. And I think his words is just stick to my mind. Mm-hmm. What a brilliant world. I really hope we can get all the nuclear dust out of that country and never, ever allow them to touch it again.
Bill, I would like to add one thing also. The Iranian government has got a lot of experience in negotiation. For them, it's like a game to play.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they are practically, for them, they have a lot of experience, and that's what they're doing, and that's what they're good about it. Therefore, really, it's hard to say what direction is going, because also the Iranian government, Supreme Leader, is gone. Now there are some internal problems inside Iran government between for the power also somehow. Therefore, I think we need some time. But during the process, no matter what, we believe the behavior of Iranian government is not changing. And also, here I would like to add one more solution to that. I would like to appreciate what Congressman Douglas Moffa always help us with the resolution. Then, therefore, we have resolution 166, 100, 1148. Congressman Douglas Moffa always was the, you know, bless him always, he was supporting our cause. And during those resolutions, we always talking about resistance units, and he support us. Therefore, we appreciated what Congressman Douglas Moffa, really, we miss him, and we appreciate what he has done for us. Therefore, as far as going in our objective now, we know the Iranian government are not going to change behavior. Therefore, what we do, the NCRI right now, they're going to this next phase. And I provide some information that Maryam Rajavi, based on 10-point plan, she announced the provisional government that that we think the Iranian government is going to fail, uprising will come, and we have to be ready. Therefore, that provisional government has got a lot of support from the United States and from the lot of European and from our military, from our former officials. That I think that will be the solution. That will be the direction. I know there are in media some support for monarchy, but the Iranian people, they don't want to go back to dictatorship, and they want to go to republic, like what we have here. Mm-hmm. And that's the direction we are going, practically.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I think the regime has been very successful in their negotiations over the past 40 years by this delay and lying and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think they've ever had an administration like we have now that's willing to put some meat behind the threats. Everybody else has appeased them, and it's worked for them. So it's logical that they would continue to negotiate in that fashion. It's always worked for them in the past.
And then they get a pallet of cash.
Yeah, and
right?
Then the next administration comes in and makes good with them and sends them money. And so they just have to wait it out, and they'll continue to play the same game that they've done all along. And I'm just hoping that the current administration doesn't let up. I mean, got these guys on the ropes, and they have to negotiate in good faith, or some bad stuff's going to happen to them. And I think they have to understand that. And I really don't think they do. I think they're just buying time. Does that sound
absolutely? Yeah. There is big, Bill. There is a big factor here. For the last 40 years, the USA never attacked Iranian government, except during the hostage taking. Remember, we tried to save our hostages that time? But look at what President Trump has done that nobody else has done. For the first time, the USA directly attacked Iranian government and get rid of Supreme Leader. This is a big change. I mean, the Iranian government, to me, is a real loser, because when the USA attacked their nuclear site, they get rid of the Supreme Leader. They don't have anything. They don't have that much for negotiation. That what they had before, to me, is all gone by that attack. I mean, they know any time they want to announce, hey, we got enrichment from 65% to 80%, they know they're going to get punished. And that's why I think the direction is changed, and that's why Iranian government is changed, is weak. And that's why Maryam Rajavi, based on 10-point plan, she knows the situation, and she's announcing that transition government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, obviously, they have to change the way they're governing, or we're going to be right back in the same position we were in before. We still have, I mean, Trump's in for another couple of years, so I don't know if they can stall it out that long or not, but I think if we just hold a firm hand, and then the people of Iran hang tight and move when they need to move, I think there's a good chance that, you know, you can get rid of these guys.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, if you guys had, I mean, I'm always curious, if somebody called and said, all right, the three of you are in charge, We'll do whatever you say. Like, what would you tell them to do now on our side? That's all we can control, right?
I will say to recognizing Iranian people for regime change, because we never recognize Iranian opposition. That's why I think if we empower the Iranian opposition, that's really helping. I mean, in the last uprising, we have seen some big donors, they try to promote Reza Pahlavi, but Reza Pahlavi is not representative of Iranian people. Therefore, if we really want to help Iranian people recognizing Maryam Rajavi 10-point plan, that's what the Congress has done. That's based on House Resolution 166. If we go that direction, right now I have the list of a lot of former U.S. officials who they are supporting this NCRI 10-point plan and provisional government. For example, from our army, a lot of names, General David Phillips, former U.S. military commander. Colonel Wes Martin, former senior anti-terrorist officer. We have from Democrat, Patrick J. Kennedy, bipartisan. We have from Democrat, we have Senator Tercelli. We have Tom Ridge, former U.S. Secretary of Home. These are a lot of people in U.S. there. A lot of General James Jones, the commander of the NATO. We have all these people that sensing what you are talking, that they are feeling that right now is the time to support the Iranian people. I was at one of the conferences, Mr. Mike Pompeo, he said very nicely, he said, what is missing in the equation between Iran and USA? That we are not recognizing the Iranian organization, Iranian People for Regime Change. I think, Bill, Aaron, that's the key to go forward. That's the key to bring change in Iran. If we empower that, the Iranian people, they don't want money, they don't want, they have everything. Just recognition, it'd be a big boost, it'd be a big empowering for regime change. That's what I think we want.
And what form does that recognition take? Like, what's the practical, do we just, because the 10-point plan.
That's a policy.
What's that?
A policy or a statement.
Okay.
That will devastate the regime.
Really?
Regime, absolutely, absolutely. Regime is afraid of the people and the organizing system.
That's true. I mean, I don't think really understand, like, I mean, okay, so that we've talked about the 10-point plan. So in short, so reject the clerical rule, freedom of speech, and that goes on, freedom of all sorts of things. Third one is commitment to individual and social freedoms and rights. It doesn't seem like a revolutionary idea, but it's very revolutionary. Fourth one is separation of religion and state. Fifth one, complete gender equality in political, social, cultural, and economic rights. Sixth, an independent judiciary and legal system. We haven't even touched that, and I'm sure that's a nightmare over there.
Definitely.
Seventh is autonomy for and removal of double injustices, which might need more explaining. Eighth is justice and equal opportunities in the realms of employment and entrepreneurship for the people. Nine is protection and rehabilitation of the environment. Gosh, maybe we could send some of our environmentalists over to you guys. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah,
we'd like to package them up and have them. We'd like to send them first, actually.
That's a step too far.
Oh, sorry. Ten, I muddied the waters. Ten is a non-nuclear Iran, which is something that's like the only one of the ten that we hear about.
Yeah, the seventh one that you question, autonomy. You know, Iran has different nationalities. They have Kurdish, they have Baluch, they have Arab. So all of those nationalities and different ethnicities under NCRI plan, they have autonomy under the central government. This is what they want. This is what it means.
They want to have a voice instead of being the lesser than groups.
Exactly. They could have their own language, their own culture. under the umbrella of the, you know, United
Kingdom. See, and there isn't anything on that list
market,
that is weird or...
Market economy is something that I don't think we emphasize enough. We want to have a free trade with the world, with the West, and this is how the country can grow, and Iran can be even a powerhouse, you know, on the side of the free world. You know what I mean? So that is the market, free market economy is the number eight that
yes.
I like to emphasize as well.
We have to take a really quick break, our last one for the for this time. But when we come back, I'd like to know when this 10-point plan was first introduced, because it didn't just happen. It's been around, because even I know about it. So it has to have been there for a while. It's only because Fred told me about it, actually, but he did tell me about it a long time ago. We're going to come right back with our guests, Fred, Shanaz, and Javad. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What a shot you could be if you could shoot at me with those angry eyes.
I should produce your rallies. I have lots of ideas for your songs. So in that list, the one I was curious about was the double injustices part, number 7. Why? What is that? What does that mean?
You can go ahead if you want to. Double injustice again, nationalities and ethnicities. So the Kurdish people, for example, they have been subject to, you know, they cannot speak their language, they cannot pursue their cultural activities, and they are the poorest areas in the Iran. And of course, they have been consistently attacked militarily, both by former Shah and the religious dictatorship. So they have been double injustices against them.
I see what you're saying.
Both economically, culturally, and militarily. This whole, the Mahsa uprising started with a Kurdish girl that came traveled to Tehran, and a little bit of her hair was showing up. That's how they beaten her to death. That whole uprising started because of that. So Kurdish people are very strong, very patriotic, and of course that was the reason that they became armed, and they want to have to keep their arm because it's part of their lifestyle. And both the Shah and the clerical regime wanted to disarm them and not to follow their cultural routines and things like that. That's how I see it.
Okay.
Correct me, Fred or Javad, if I'm wrong.
Here's Javad in
there.
He's probably taking a nap now. He gave up on us.
Well, one thing that I wanted to say is that, just for your listener, is that this regime cannot be trusted in any way. Look at the, Shanoz mentioned about the nuclear program that was exposed by the NCRI more than 20 years ago. If it wasn't for that exposure, the Western countries wouldn't know anything about that. You know, even after that, the first time that they exposed a nuclear site, this and that, you know, there has been a cat and mouse game between the Iranian regime and the Atomic Energy Organization, which have been trying to get into Iran and find out what's going on. The regime does not voluntarily give up the information. They have to go and find it. So this is what it is. And on top of it, they have mentioned that they have more than 500 kilograms of enriched uranium, more than 60%. And they say this is for peaceful purposes. What peaceful purposes?
Yeah, right.
For peaceful purposes, you can only enrich up to 3%, not 60%, not 80%. When you go to that level, that's for atomic bomb.
Right.
And we should not let this regime get hold of atomic bomb. And one other thing that I would like to mention is, you know, I wrote an article for one of the local papers, and in that paper, I mentioned that what can we do short of going to war? And, you know, there are some real things that we can do. I mean, Western countries, all the European countries, embassies are open in Tehran. We got to close them. We have to close the Iranian embassy all over Europe. We have to kick out their agents. We have to stop their airlines flying all over Europe. You know, we shouldn't be thinking about ballistic missile. Each airplane can be a ballistic missile.
Sure.
Each airplane flying over the European cities can carry bombs. And they would do the same thing that they did to the civilian airliner, Ukrainian airplane, and killing more than 165 people. So there are some steps that we can do, and regime understands what that means.
You know, you mentioned the Kurds. And here a while back, there was some talk about arming the Kurds and having them lead a revolution. What would and they, of course, didn't want to do that, but what would the reaction of the Iranian people be if the Kurds did rise up and kind of led the charge on a regime change? Would the people support that?
Bill, there is one thing also. There are a lot of Kurdish people that they are against the government. And the Kurdish area, there is a party of the Kurdish area, which they are very effective against the Iranian government. But the Kurdish area is located, they're located in one area.
Mm.
They are not spread all over Iran.
Right.
If you want to be effective, you need to have an organization that spread all over Iran. That's why these resistance units are all over in all the more than 300 cities. That's what we need. Locally with one group is very hard. We need to have all over Iran to effectively challenge the IRGC. And also, Aaron, based on your question regarding to the 10-point plan, it was the conference in France in the European Parliament in December 2006 that the call Future of Iran that Maryam Rajavi announced 10-year plan. In that, almost from 2006, practically this 10-point plan started.
Okay. 2006. Okay.
And I should add, this week is the 45th anniversary of NCRI, start of NCRI. It started 3 years after the 1979 anti-monarchy revolution. This is started because there was 500,000 people rallied in Tehran, and Khomeini was brutally suppressed, and hundreds of people were killed. So that was the red point for the opposition to start their organization against this clerical rule. They basically hijacked the anti-monarchy revolution. And why they have stayed this long in power, in my opinion, appeasement has been the reason, from trying to moderate the regime to sending them a plane load of cash by President Obama, trusting them while they are deceitful, you know, deceitful, and all of those has been delayed the overthrow of this regime. Like last week, there was a rally of 100,000 Iranians from all over the world in Paris, which was planned months ahead. They got permission. It was a huge thing. I was there. Jawad was there. And guess what? Just 24 hours before that, the French government canceled the rally. Why? They said they, because of security reasons, they had threats from monarchy extremists and the regime IRGC. And instead of protecting the rally, they actually came and attacked the rally goers. They blocked hundreds of thousands of people that were driving, that were coming from other cities in Europe, the buses, they wouldn't even let them enter the France. But despite this, more than 300 buses, they came to Paris. And guess what? Some of them started not knowing what's going on. And it was really brutal. I myself attended a conference that was a lot of speakers there. From U.S., the speakers, one of them was General Todd Wolfers. He was a NATO commander. General James Jones, General Keith Clark, former FBI director Louis Free, and most important, Charles Michel. He was a Belgian prime minister and president of EU up to a year and a half ago. We had prime ministers from Canada, from England, from Romania, from Finland, from Belgium. These are all former prime ministers. They were all there in support of Madam Rajavi's 10-point plan and a free Iran. And they all condemn Emmanuel Macron's decision to cancel our rally. And guess what? A day before they canceled the rally, Macron spoke with Iran's foreign minister. We call this appeasement.
They
try to appease this regime. And guess what? In today's news I read, the French ships going through Hormuz, Iran allowing them to go through that. You know what I mean?
France has problems.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
They cannot put down the yellow flag.
Do you think that that type of a rally is possible again in Iran? I mean, do the people have the ability to mass those kinds of numbers and protest the government, or are they still too afraid to do that?
Yes.
Bill, I think this is a good question. What happened? If there is a big rally in Iran without organization, they are going to get killed.
Right.
Therefore, the big rally by itself is not going to work against the Iranian regime. We have seen what happened in December last year. They killed so many people.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be very smart movement inside Iran, very organized, and has to be with the plan at a small area, a small area, a small area. If you put a lot of people in big area with no protection, that will give a tool to Iranian government to kill a lot of people, and practically it is going to bring more damage. So you have to be very smart how you're going to move forward. But one thing, you know, we talk about NCR and all this, this is very important. Always the NCRI is talking about, they say their job is two things. First, who is going to change the Iran regime? That's the question. Yeah, it's good to Iran regime. Who's going to do it? We talk about it, the resistance units. Then practically, what we are going to do after that? The NCRI said is we are only for transferring power to the people. And after that, also to oversee the peaceful transfer of power to the Iranian people. Therefore, this is a transition government. This is practically, that's why Araghchi called friends and tell them, stop this demonstration, because they know we are moving in the right direction.
Right.
And that's why...
You know what's happening again? We're running out of time. It never fails. It seems like 2 hours will be a long time. What will we talk about? But it's always over too fast. We would love to have you back on, because obviously this issue isn't going away tomorrow. And we appreciate you taking time on a Sunday to speak with us. We definitely want to do this again.
Yeah, as this evolves, we definitely need to talk some more.
We are doing that, and we know you will do whatever it takes. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.